For more than a year now, journalists Michael Isikoff and David Korn have been devoted to covering the Trump campaign's ties to Russia. Isikoff was the first reporter to reveal that there was a U.S. intelligence investigation into Russian ties to a figure in the Trump campaign, Carter Page. Korn was the first to reveal the existence of the infamous Russia dossier, the unverified collection of reports alleging connections between the Trump campaign and Russia, compiled by former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele. Now, in their new book, Russian Roulette, the two men attempt to put all the pieces of this story together. The book chronicles and explores this bizarre scandal, explains the stakes, and answers one of the biggest questions in American politics. How and why did a foreign government infiltrate the country's political process and gain influence in Washington? Michael Isikoff is an investigative journalist who has worked for The Washington Post, Newsweek, and NBC News. He is currently the chief investigative correspondent for Yahoo News. David Korn is a veteran Washington journalist and political commentator. He is the Washington bureau chief for Mother Jones magazine and an analyst for MSNBC. Again, the name of the book is Russian Roulette, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Michael Isikoff and David Korn to the roundtable this morning. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be with you.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having us.
Michael, let us begin with you when it comes to this story. As I mentioned in the introduction, you're looking to answer all of these questions. There's still a lot of answers that we need here, right? I mean, there's a lot of question marks around what happened, aren't there?
There certainly are, and not just for us in the general public, but all Robert Mueller, the special counsel, as you may have just seen, he has just now subpoenaed records from President Trump's businesses, including some related to Russia, which is an indication that he's finally getting around to looking to what we start out in our book talking about, which is Trump's attempt to do business in Russia. Something that has gone on for many years, but really became more aggressive as he became closer to running for president. He flies to Moscow in November 2013 and preside over the Miss Universe pageant, but also to try to nail down a business deal with his partner, an oligarch named Aras Agalarov, who was close to Putin, to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. That finally doesn't come to fruition, although it went further along than most people realize, as we document in the book. And then he tries again in 2015, after he has begun running for president, again to have a business deal to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. And it appears that the special counsel is getting around to looking at what we document at great length in our book was concerted efforts by Donald Trump to do business in Russia.
David, obviously the big question, and certainly what the Trump administration and Donald Trump himself has been talking about, of saying that there is no collusion. And we even had, obviously, there's been some back and forth in this regarding the House investigation of saying, okay, no collusion. What do you end up thinking at the end of your investigation?
It often depends what you mean about collusion. There's no evidence out there, nor will there be evidence, that Donald Trump sat down with Russian agents and plotted out exactly how Moscow was going to hack the election, steal documents, and put them out to help Trump and hurt the Democrats and Hillary Clinton. But what you do see, and in our book, I think one value of the book is that we lay out everything in a comprehensive, straightforward narrative. So all the bits and pieces that have come out over the years, not in chronological order, are put together. And when you put it together, you see the big picture. And part of the big picture is that the Trump campaign had multiple contacts with Moscow, as Russia, as Putin and his intelligence services were attacking the United States with this information warfare. There was a fellow you might have heard of named George Papadopoulos, who had contacts with Russians and Russian cutouts, first trying to set up a meeting between Trump and Putin. This is in the spring and summer of 2016 while the campaign's going on. And there was a fellow named Carter Page who was also having contacts with, who was foreign policy advisor, having contacts with the Russians. And in March of 2016, they're both at a meeting with Donald Trump And Papadopoulos says, you know, I can set up a contact here with Russia for us, maybe get a meeting between you, Mr. Trump, and Vladimir Putin. And this is new in the book. This was not part of any House investigation. In fact, the House Republicans did not look at this fact. But we reveal that Papadopoulos says he's told Robert Mueller, the special counsel with whom he's now a cooperating witness, that when he said to Trump, I can set up these meetings with Russians and maybe get you a face-to-face with Vladimir Putin, that Trump said to him, that's interesting, as a form of encouragement. And that, to Papadopoulos, was a green light to go ahead and continue on with these contacts that went on through the summer. And so when you think about collusion, I think about the fact that while Russia's attacking us, the Trump campaign is reaching out to them. And even when it becomes public that Russia's behind this, they continue to reach out. And Trump is out there publicly saying that the Russians aren't doing anything. So he seems to be, at least as we put it in the book, aiding and abetting this assault on American democracy. Some people can define that as collusion or not, but it certainly is an involvement and a way of being active in a manner that helped Russia do what it did.
So, Michael, as you mentioned, that the headlines blaring are that Special Counsel Robert Mueller has subpoenaed the Trump Organization for these business documents. And the New York Times first reported this. The subpoena included documents related to Russia. As you mentioned, you talk about this in the book. This is where this story begins for you. What was, help fill in the blanks as far as what do you believe that Trump and the Trump Organization was hoping to get out of these meetings, assuming that we also believe that they didn't necessarily believe that they were going to be elected, that Donald Trump was going to be elected president.
You know, it's interesting. On the last point, one little anecdote which we have in the book that is new is as late as October 7th, 2016, which was turned out to be quite a momentous day. That's the day that the Obama administration publicly accused Russia of meddling in the election, the day that the Access Hollywood tape came out, the day that the Podesta emails were leaked by WikiLeaks. The day begins with Jay Johnson, the Homeland Security Secretary, calling Donald Trump to brief him about U.S. plans to deal with a imminent hurricane, Hurricane Andrew, that was attacking Florida. Hillary Clinton had just gotten the same briefing. There were concerns that, that this would be a momentous hurricane that would cost lives in Florida. And Jay Johnson calls Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is friendly. Hi, Jay, how you doing? Hey, when this is over, why don't you come to Trump Tower and we'll have lunch? And Jay Johnson was taken aback, thinking, well, you know, when this is over, Mr. President, you could be, Mr. Trump, you could be in Washington in the White House, not in Trump Tower. And Trump says, oh, yeah, I guess, you know. Anyway, it does raise the question of whether Trump ever really expected he was going to be elected president. But when you talk about what he expected to get out of the meetings, are you talking about the meetings he had about doing a Trump Tower business deal in Moscow? Because there, I think it's easy. What he expected to get out is money and a huge tower with his name on it, which is what the kind of thing that turns Donald Trump on.
Well, that is the point. I mean, as far as the negotiation here could have been less about the election and winning the election and more about personal profit for the Trump business and the Trump name, correct?
Yeah, sure. And he could have seen running for president. He may well have seen running for president as a great sort of exercise in further branding his name and making it even more a marketable property.
And I was going to say, in the book, we describe all the ways that he was flattering of Vladimir Putin before and after the Miss Universe contest and throughout the 2016 campaign. It was, you know, noted at the time, and people found this very curious. What they didn't know during the 2015-2016 period, that Donald Trump again had a secret deal. He didn't tell the public this, working through a former felon, a guy named Felix Sater, with a Russian company to try again to do a Moscow tower. So there was good reason for him to be fawning over Vladimir Putin, because he knew there's no way you can do a big project, especially as an American, in Moscow if Putin's mad at you. So while he was campaigning on an American first, I'm going to stick up for America platform, he was trying to cut a deal with Russians, and that would have to put him in a position where he couldn't say anything negative about Vladimir Putin. It was a tremendous conflict of interest that he hid from the voters. And you know, I think if we look at his interactions with Putin and his dealings in Russia over the last couple of years, you see that he has a psychological affinity for Putin, as he may have for all strongmen. And then in some ways, he wanted to identify with Putin, and he wanted to think of himself as an American oligarch.
The name of the book is Russian Roulette, The Inside Story of Putin's War on America and the Election of Donald Trump. It is published by 12. Michael Isikoff and David Korn join us on the roundtable. Michael, when it comes to just what David was talking about in the relationship between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, the president has been, you just look at how he has reacted over the last year, and the general statement has been he's acting like somebody, certainly not like somebody who's not guilty of something. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and how you see that fitting into the narrative that you have written in this book.
Well, look, it is pretty striking, you know, time and again, ever since the news first broke, that the Democratic National Committee had been hacked that it was likely the Russians, something that people in U.S. law enforcement and the intelligence community confirmed pretty quickly, that Trump was dismissive from the get-go. He described it initially as a hoax. He didn't believe that the Russians had anything to do with it, even after the U.S. intelligence community went public and issued that extraordinary statement, officially determining that it was the Russians who did this, who had hacked our election, who had dumped the emails in an effort to influence the election. Trump refused to accept it. And by doing so, he made it more difficult for the Obama administration to deal with the issue, because since if they were to go much further, they were afraid, or at least Obama was afraid, that he would look political, that he would look like he was trying to help Hillary Clinton and hurt Donald Trump. And so Trump, taking this very stark outlier position that was dismissive of the idea that the Russians had done what they did, even after the U.S. intelligence community was on the record saying, this is the consensus, it was the Russians, you know, Trump's refusal to accept it complicated the situation for everybody.
When the two of you look, David, at the investigation that's happening, and obviously you have done your investigation, you have done the investigative reporting here, from what you know and what you have seen from the outside looking into the Mueller investigation, as evidenced even by by the latest headline, do you feel that all those dots are being connected?
That's a great question. One of my least favorite cliches is when you say you've only seen the tip of the iceberg. But I think in this case, in terms of the Mueller investigation, it applies. You know, we just learned recently that Mueller has subpoenaed records from the Trump Organization, you know, involving business transactions and some related to Russia. We didn't know for sure that that was something that Mueller was looking into. You know, in our book, Mike and I lay out a lot of stories a lot of things that haven't been told before that we know. We've been informed that the House Intelligence Committee that just recently shut down its investigation at the behest of the Republicans, that they didn't look at. They didn't bother with any with almost any part of the iceberg. So, we know in that instance that they're not connecting all the dots, and they're more or less mostly concerned with protecting Donald Trump. I will say this. Robert Mueller's job is not to put out a 1,000-page report at the end of the day connecting the dots and telling us all that happened. His job is to investigate potential crimes and bring forward cases that he believes are reasonable to prosecute. In the course of doing that, he will reveal information through indictments and through, court trials that will tell us aspects of the case that we probably don't know. But if he can't bring a case on a particular matter that he's looked at, we may not know. He is not compelled at the end of the day to write a big report about everything he found. That was actually the job of Congress. There's still the Senate committee investigating. But if Congress doesn't do its job, and again, it's controlled by the Republicans here. It's really more or less up to them. If they don't do their job and investigate fully, we may never know all the aspects of what went on with the Russian attack on the United States.
With that said, do you have more confidence in the Senate investigation?
Marginally. Again, Mike and I both have covered other investigations in Congress in the past. And if you look at something like the Iran-Contra investigation, 20 years ago or so, they had much more staff. They seemed from the outside to be much more vigorous and robust in their investigations. This is a very unwieldy scandal or controversy that goes off in a lot of different directions and goes around the world and has dozens of people who should be interviewed, not once, but twice and maybe three times, with a lot of subpoenas flying to get documents to confirm what these people are saying or to disprove what they're saying. And I just don't think the Senate Intelligence Committee, even if it's proceeding in good faith, has all the necessary resources to do everything that is necessary. Certainly, they're more concerned about the matter and doing a better job than the House Intelligence Committee, but we may need more beyond that.
Michael, I'm also curious, the other big headline, which is that the president has imposed these new sanctions on Russia over the cyber attacks. And this comes a long time after this was directed by the House and Senate. What does that say about our relationship and, more importantly, the president's relationship with Russia?
Well, look, this was legislation that Donald Trump didn't want enacted, didn't want to sign, only did so reluctantly when it was clear he could not prevail were he to veto the legislation. So he got forced to do this. What's actually most striking about the announcement today is that there were other cyber attacks that the U.S. government knew about, including repeated cyber attacks on the electrical grid itself and on the energy sector in the United States, and that these have continued. And, this really goes back to another part of our book, which is how the Obama administration dealt with this. And, there were those within the White House warning that if you don't strike back against the Russians, they will be emboldened. They will continue to do what they're doing. And it looks like that's exactly what has happened. Whatever response the Obama administration thought to do at the time of the election attack, from today's perspective, has to look pretty anemic because it didn't stop the Russians from doing what they were doing. And it turns out that their cyber attacks on the United States were even more aggressive and more extensive than we knew about and have continued.
David, as we wrap up our conversation, I do have to ask the big question, which is, I think, on the minds of most people, which is, okay with this if we understand that the Russians meddled in our elections, and as we look to the midterms in the fall of this year, even with those sanctions, how safe is that election process?
You know, that's a great question, and perhaps the most important question that we're getting this week as we talk about our book. It was only a couple of days ago that the chief of the National Security Agency, Admiral Mike Rogers, said that he fully expects the Russians to try to meddle once again in the midterm elections coming up. In the book, we note something that I think a lot of people overlooked at the time, and we report on this extensively, that in 2016, the Russians didn't just attack the Hillary Clinton campaign and try to mess about in the presidential election. They also attacked particular congressional races, again, aiming at Democrats, not Republicans, and they picked strategic races, some of the most important races on the Democratic hit list, where they thought they had a chance of picking up seats and beating Republicans. So this demonstrates to me that the Russians certainly understand the importance of meddling in congressional elections, that they have the means and the knowledge base to know how to do that. And you have to realize that, you know, local elections, local campaigns, local political parties are not always going to be as sophisticated when it comes to protecting themselves from cyber attacks, from Russians or anybody else. And it could be that they're easy pickings. And that's why, you know, as a citizen, I'm concerned when I look at the Trump administration, and I don't see it yet as a top priority for Trump and his agencies to do anything about this. And the sanctions that were just announced that Trump was forced into implementing by an act of Congress, it wasn't his own idea, I think are not going to be strong enough to dissuade Vladimir Putin from trying again.
The book is fascinating and very, very important as well. It is Russian Roulette, the inside story of Putin's war on America and the election of Donald Trump. Michael Isikoff, David Korn, thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Good to be with you.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Michael Isikoff and David Korn are the authors of Russian Roulette. The book is published by 12. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.